Well, he is known as the father of the Constitution. And not only did James Madison play a massive role in writing and shaping the U.S. Constitution during the Constitutional Convention of 1787, but he wrote much of the Bill of Rights. He was one of the co-authors with Alexander Hamilton and John Jay, who wrote the Federalist Papers, which was those series of essays that were explaining what the new U.S. Constitution was and defending the new U.S. Constitution and urging the colonies to take it up and defend it. And that, of course, are some of the highlights for James Madison, but a consequential figure in U.S. history. Jack Rakove is the co-professor of history and American studies and professor of political science emeritus at Stanford University and joins us this morning to talk about who I think professor has a larger than life stature in American history, but he was not physically a large man.
He was relatively slight, soft-spoken. In presence, people sometimes complained, like in the Virginia Ratification Convention, that they found it hard to hear him speak. He became a great storyteller, and people have great stories about visiting his house in Montpelier outside Orange, Virginia, and being regaled with stories about the Revolution and so on.
Well, let's back it up a little bit with James Madison. James Madison wasn't the figure that maybe Thomas Jefferson was or even George Washington was, obviously. But what was his upbringing? How did he differ from maybe some of the others?
Well, he's pretty similar to Jefferson in some ways. I mean, he came from his father, James Madison Sr., was probably the largest landowner in Orange County, Virginia. Probably had more slaves than any of the other planters in the neighborhood. Madison was well-educated. He was sent off as a young man when he was about 14 or so to the College of New Jersey, which we now know better as Princeton University. He was the eldest of, the 9 or 10 other siblings. In a sense, the privileged son of a wealthy planter, extremely well-educated. And he was able to devote his life to politics. And as a young man, he was somewhat aimless when he finished his studies at Princeton and went back to Virginia. He wasn't really quite sure what he wanted to do with life. May have been a bit of a hypochondriac, worried a lot about his health. And then the Revolution basically gave him a career.
And what was his role? How did he view what the Revolution was going to be about?
Well, I think he shared the views of most of the group we called the Patriots. By 1774, 1775, though some people felt that Boston may have gone a bit far in terms of jumping the tea into the harbor in December 1773. I mean, he felt like most Patriots that the British government was badly misstepping in its attempts to govern America, that its claimed the Parliament could legislate for the Americans and the American colonists in all cases whatsoever was outrageous. Once the Revolution broke, he wasn't quite sure what he was going to do, but he served in the fifth Provincial Convention that wrote the first Virginia State Constitution, served in the Virginia Legislature, lost re-election, served in the Virginia Council of State, and then in 1780 he went off to the Continental Congress meeting in Philadelphia, and he served there for 3.5 years without going home once. Mm. So he was really awakened politically by the Revolution. The Revolution gave him a career. And Madison made a career out of politics in a way that few of his contemporaries would have done in the same way.
I'm curious to know what his role was in writing and crafting the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, because I had read at some point that he was unsure if a Bill of Rights was even necessary.
Well, he remained unsure even while he wrote it, but I think it's better to step up and go back to your opening remark. We always call Madison the father of the Constitution, and that term is fine in and of itself, but it's also a bit vague and imprecise. So I think it's better to think of him as the grand strategist of constitutional reform, and that was true in the 1780s when the Articles of Confederation was collapsing. People at the time said the Continental Congress had become an imbecile form of government. I think Madison played a more active role than anyone else in the politics in 1786 and 1787 that led to the calling of the Constitutional Convention. He and the other Virginians got to Philadelphia early, and they discussed the idea of let's try to set an agenda for the convention. The basic agenda is what we call the Virginia Plan, and that was mostly the work of Madison's own studies back in Montpelier, and then when he's back in New York, and when he's finally returned to the Continental Congress. And I think when the Constitution was finally ratified, although Madison did not think a Bill of Rights was necessary, he felt in some ways it was superfluous. He also saw that there might be some dangers in having one. He nevertheless decided that to bring the whole process of ratifying the Constitution to a happy close, there are a lot of well-meaning, of somewhat misguided anti-Federalists, opponents of the Constitution out there, who really seemed to think adding a Bill of Rights was necessary. So Madison decided that he really had to push it through the first federal Congress, even though he privately called it the nauseous project of amendments.
We haven't really delved into Hamilton so much in our series looking at the Founding Fathers because of the popularity of the musical and how big that's gotten. Yeah. But I do want to focus a little bit on that meeting with Hamilton and Jefferson and Madison and how they ended up settling on Washington being the location for the Capitol.
Well, it's just part of the big debate over getting Congress to issue a charter for a national bank. You know, so Hamilton was Secretary of the Treasury. Hamilton was a brilliant statesman. Hamilton had really studied the issues of public finance quite carefully. And he was really committed to having a bank as an essential instrument for reforming the whole finance of government. The Virginians were really committed to having a capital on the banks of the Potomac. I mean, Washington was probably the leading advocate of it, but they felt in different ways that actually having a serious city like that in Virginia would be very helpful to the state's future economic development. And so they reached a kind of an impasse. It's basically a bargain. It's basically a deal. Mm. And it advanced the story. Even after they passed it, they weren't wholly sure that the Capitol would finally go there. So Congress was in New York. It went New York City, the first federal Congress, and then it went back to Philadelphia. And then people felt that Philadelphia, of course, was America's largest city and, you know, a great town. They thought maybe it would just stay there, but they went ahead with the project along the Potomac.
I Madison also has a unique experience situated in history because he had two forays into the battles with the British, obviously with the Revolution and then the War of 1812, where British troops burned down the White House and burned down the Capitol as well. What was that time period like for him?
The War of 1812. Well, he's the only president ever to have been actively on a battlefield. Though it wasn't a great adventure. It's at the Battle of Bladensburg, which is a little Maryland town outside Washington. He retreats to Washington. They have to leave. I mean, it was a great embarrassment. I mean, the bigger argument that some scholars make is that we don't think of Madison as a great wartime president. But the contrary argument is Madison wanted to make sure that the presidency remained an essentially Republican institution, Republican, you know, lowercase r, meaning he was not a great enthusiast for executive power in the same way that Alexander Hamilton was. Mm. And so if you want to give his presidency a more powerful evaluation, you'd say he was trying to govern, you know, consistent with those norms. You know, he let New England essentially go its own way.
Yeah,
you know, there's a group of very strong dissenters, you know, in the northeasternmost states, and they basically sit the war out. And you know, Madison wasn't happy about it, but on the other hand, he didn't want to turn it into another political cause that might itself, threaten the durability of the Union.
Mm. I have 30 seconds left here. Was Dolly really more famous?
More famous than Madison?
Yeah.
I don't think she's more famous, but she was an accomplished first lady. Many historians see her really as the first genuine first lady because Abigail, Martha Washington filled that role, but in a very formal way. And, you know, the Washington court was, you know, wasn't the happiest place. Abigail Adams would rather stayed mostly in Massachusetts. Jefferson, of course, had been widowed, and Dolly in some ways, you know, stood in as a surrogate first lady, and that's, I think people see her as really the first active first lady. Maybe not quite in the Jackie Kennedy character, but by 19th century standards, still a pretty strong one.
Jack Rakove, professor at Stanford University, thank you for your time, the insight on James Madison. Really appreciate it, and we'll talk again very soon, I hope.
My pleasure.
Yeah. We'll take a break. More coming up next on JR Morning.